And they, these here, are, okay, the talk I'm going to present here is based on these two papers. The first one appeared in November last year, and the second one probably will be accessible tomorrow. So mostly I will concentrate on the results of this second one. And this is the plan of what I want to talk about. The brief motivation. Then again, brief remarks on the very well-known case of a massive spin pool theory, that is the Fields Pauli and its difficulties. And then I will argue that there are other very old, well-known theories, models of gravity, which include mass system 2. And the objective of our research was to show that these theories probably overcome the long-standing difficulties of this policy. So to do that, we will study the propagation of mass system 2 modes in the framework of these generalized gravity in arbitrary curved Einstein background. And I'll show that actually that the famous six propagating modes, the Fulwer Desert mode, does not exist. So that's the claim, and that's the central result of our work so far. And in particular for DS and AGS, everything is perfectly right, unlike the Pauli theory and all its computations. So the main message of this talk will be on point 4 and point 5. Point 5 will be crucial. Already we have shown in point in the earlier paper that in the DS and the ADS background there are these five propagating modes, but we couldn't show that they are not both. So by mapping it to a generalized Fields Pauli equation, and I will show you in what sense it's generalized, then it follows that actually you can show that at least for weak services, there are no ones. So in any case, there's no Fulwer Desert in these questions. And whether there's a ghost or not, that we can only establish so far in the curve, in weakly curve question. So the modification, I'll be very brief. It is, like everybody else says in this conference, we want to understand some phenomena which is observed and we believe it's there, and people have invented various ways of understanding it. One of them is to change the form of gravitational force rather than adding extra matter energy to the energy balance of the universe. But the question is whether gravity has a mass or not. This is a challenging question at many levels. For the time being, I would just concentrate on the consistency of constructivism. If you do not have any theory of this kind, which is consistent and meaningful, probably the person is present in the community. Massless spin pools are everywhere in any higher dimensional theory of gravity. You have infinite numbers there, and presumably they are consistent from that point of view. However, the challenge is to construct a four dimensional theory, which contains only a finite number of them and in an interacting way, okay? Which have non trivial interaction with gravity. For a non-intacting theory, of course, it's 70 years that we have a very simple model, which has a Lagrangian consisting from the bilinear part of the Einstein-Hilbert plus two Lorentz invariant terms. These are mass terms added for the field H. By adding them, the local symmetry of Einstein-Hilbert is gone. Therefore, in principle, the only thing which guides us is just the Lorentz invariance of the construction. And the Lorentz invariance also, the Lorentz invariance in fact does nothing in fix the coefficients here. So you can have arbitrary coefficients in this one. But it turns out that if you choose this to be Einstein-Hilbert and adjust these two parameters in this way, balance them in some way, with one relation between them, then you obtain the fixed Pauli theory. So, as I mentioned, the number of adjustments, in fact, is more than just adjusting the master. You also need to adjust the other term. But having done that, then this free theory is ghost and vacuum free, and this surface only 5 degrees of freedom, which is the correct number of degrees of freedom for a massive distinctive particle in a Lorentz invariant theorem. Okay? The problem arises as soon as you start oscillations, like what happens if you go to the zero mass limit. When you go to zero mass limit, you discover that there's a discontinuity. In fact, this theory flatly contradicts the experiment if you want to take a naive zero mass limit in an expansion in powers of the Newtonian constant. One has to include nonlinear terms, that's what Weinstein has shown, then you can get agreement with observations for a certain range of distances. But then the question arises, how do you add nonlinearity? Okay? The thing which will produce Pauli fields at a linearized level, at a quadratic level, is this generalization of Einstein's theory. You take just the Hilbert Einstein and add by brute force just the master. It's very violently distorts the coordinate invariance if you do that. The H is defined as the difference of the metric G and flat metric, for instance. As soon as you do that, Bulwer and Deser have shown that no matter how curved the background is, a fixed spin zero mode starts propagating. And not only that, it has negative kinetic energy, so it's a ghost. Okay? And in any curved background, it happens. So, therefore, despite the fact that Lenz and Samson so it's one problem, but this problem always remains. But the theory is thick. It's thick because one reason for B is that you, by hand, you violate the formal invariance, and there's no guarantee that that's going to give you a correct theory. Okay, there are various approaches to this problem. It's a very short list of references. The one that we want to follow is that a second rank symmetric tensor is the simplest choice to describe a massive gravity. There may be other choices that does the job and does not have these problems. On the face of it, you expect that if you increase the number of things above second rank symmetric tensor, you have to go for third rank tensor, you increase the number of components, et cetera, et cetera. And we know that it's quite difficult to construct a constant theory for such tensors. The simplest thing, of course, about second rank tensor is a third rank tensor. That will have 64 components in 4 dimensions. But we can reduce the number of components by imposing constraints on it. For instance, we can demand it to be symmetric in the first state of indices, traceless, satisfy these types of conditions, et cetera. If you impose these conditions, you reduce the number of components of H into 16. It still is too many. So, and secondly, it's also difficult to construct a theory with so many constraints on the tensor. But it turns out that this particular tensor actually can be obtained if you embed it in a connection which is not derived from the method. Okay? In that way, you end up with a theory in which the Fehrbein, the basis vectors and tangent spaces manifold, as well as the connection, are independent variables. And by writing the Lagrangian, which is more general than Einstein's theory, then it turns out that it works. You can reduce the number of components of the equation of motion components. This is an old idea. There's nothing new in what I've said so far. I mean, the old idea is that the torsion gravity theories are old. It goes by Cartan, Hebel, Chiama, and Layton. I will give references to some of more recent news, something like 50 years ago. Both on this.
No.
Okay, so we end up with a theory in which there are independent variables that are Fehrbein and connection. You should look at this connection as a vector potential of the gauge group 013. That's a useful way of considering it for what I'm saying. Although the gauge aspect of it, which has been emphasized mostly, that means until now, in all the work of Hebel, Chiama, and Hill and later on other people, is not the aspect that I would like to understand. Okay? That's no interest for me. This is just as a construction way of doing this job, that's just regarded as a gauge field of F0, 1, 3. It's only given the dimension. But then treating it that way, you can construct a field distance. The field distance is the usual Young mistype construction. You take covariance extremes of this F and use the field variance to convert the indices into frame indices. I will use exclusively frame indices. You will never see the coordinate indices in my talk. Okay? So all these Latin letters, I, J, and N, refer to the frame indices. Therefore, the metric tensor you will see will be just eta. You will not see the curved metric in the equation. So the curvature tensor that I constructed, if the torsion was zero, this would be just a Riemann curvature written in this particular basis, and it will have the usual symmetries of the Riemann system. But in general, in this more general construction, this is only anti-symmetric with respect to interchange of I and J and M and N, but not the other symmetries of the Riemann tensor are not applicable anymore. It does not have those symmetries. So you can still construct the analog of the Ricci tensor by contracting any pair of this object which doesn't vanish. There is a unique definition of the Ricci tensor. However, it is not symmetric. The Ricci tensor can have anti-symmetric symmetries. And then finally, by one more contraction, you obtain what is the analog of the Ricci scalar. So these are all the curvature invariants that you have also in the Riemannian theory. However, here, there is another invariant that you can construct by contracting the span. Now, these are all the curvature invariants that you can construct. Therefore, the actions can contain them. Next, we want to introduce torsion. To do that, first we define a set of auxiliary variables C. I think they are called Ricci rotation coefficients or something. And then the torsion is defined as the anti-symmetric piece of A in the last couple of indices. A is always anti-symmetric, of course, in the first two indices being the gauge connection of SO1, 3. But the anti-symmetric in the last two indices minus C. That's how C is defined, and this C turns out to be a torsion. Okay? Although, sorry, it turns out to be a tensor, although neither A or C individually are tensors. Now, this tensor can be decomposed into Lorentz pieces. Then there is a vector there, another vector there. This is a pseudo vector, a vector. Therefore, there are 8 components there, and this has 24 components like the tensor itself. Therefore, we are left with T, which has 16 components, provided the subject is T to the conditions which I enumerated before, namely, it is symmetric with respect to the first pair, traceless in all indices and satisfied by standard. Therefore, the T that I want to use to construct the massive spin two particle is contained in torsion. All the objects I'm using are tensors with respect to the coordinate transformations and local Lorentz transformations. Therefore, any action constructed from it will be automatically invariant under general coordinate transformation from local Lorentz transformation, including a mass term, which I will show you in a minute. So the action is the integral of a Lagrangian. Lagrangian has two pieces. I would like to write an L, which contains at most up to two derivatives of the fields. And there is a piece which contains only F. There is a piece which contains T. Of course, F itself also contains T. This LP is like the Pauli field mass term for the torsion component. The difference now is that we never break any local symmetries of the problem. So this is pseudo vector, the vector, and the T. In the following, the important thing will be, of course, this T. Okay, this, in fact, in the models that I will construct, is A, only longitudinal part of it will propagate as a spin zero field, and then V will not be propagated. So this is the mass term. Now, there are three parameters that enter into the construction of the mass term. And the LF part, which contains polynomials in the curvature tensor, you write all the polynomials that you can write down in F squared using the Pontryagin identity for dimension. Then we end up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 parameters. So altogether, up to this order, there are 10 parameters in the Lagrangian. Now, this model has been examined in a reference that I will show you in the next transparency. It has been shown that flat space is a solution, but if you put C2 equal to 0, we go back to the previous transparency one more time. The C1 basically is the Planck mass square. C2 is a kind of cosmological function that we have introduced in order to get the C3 space, for example, as solution in all studies that was not there. C3, C4, C5, C6 are all dimensionless terms, including B. So if you set C2 equal to 0, then the flat space is trivially a solution. And people have studied the perturbations around flat space, and they have shown that if you impose restrictions on the parameters, then you will get a ghost and factors B perturbation. This is the paper which has studied them in detail. And this is another paper which has done. There are some overlaps between them, but none of them included the curve space analysis. And their interest actually was not massive C2. They were more interested in constructing the linear logic theory of gravity by mimicking Young Mean. So the focus was completely different. Oh, yeah.
There's an old paper from Weinberg in the 60s which says that all the fields that you can represent at given spin by are derivatives of each other. So that there must be some connection between T and H.
Well, that's the function.
Are you from those?
Yeah. There is no connection between T and H in this model. If you let me
function, but there's no connection between by actually the perturbations of the gravity and the method. Yeah?
Okay. Let me just proceed.
I want to keep everything second order derivative, nothing more than two derivatives in action. This action is second, does not have more than two derivatives. Yes, you should treat this f as a Young mystery. So it has first kind of the connection, therefore f squared is a two derivatives. If you have derivative of f, then you will introduce hybrid.
And that's technically so. Okay. Once you satisfy all the conditions to avoid ghosts and tachyons, how many degrees of freedom do you have in that space?
I will count them. That's one of the transparency dimensions. Okay. So in order to make the presentation manageable, I have chosen a subclass of these models by imposing some restrictions on these parameters. First of all, this B was the square of the full curvature, Fijk. I set that to 0. Secondly, this combination of C3, C4, C5 is a C3 the square of one Ricci tensor, C4 the square of another Ricci tensor, which remember that Ricci is not symmetric anymore, therefore we have two possibilities. And C5 is the square of the Ricci scalar. So we impose another condition on these three parameters. Finally, this condition is like the power of the fifth adjustment of the mass times. So subject to this, we end up
with a six-parameter family of Lagrangians, with alpha being the single mass term for the torsion component, and LF having a little bit of a fewer number of terms than what I had before. Now, proceeding to find the equations of motion, you have to look at the variational derivatives with respect to shear bind and connection independently. I'm going to show you only the first equation because they're horrendous. I don't want to scare you off. If you take the variational derivative with respect to shear bind, you get this equation in which L is the total Lagrangian standing there. And this other F here with three indices is a linear expression in the torsion component, whereas H is a quadratic expression in the torsion component. I will not use this H. This F also will not be, I mean, you will not see these equations like this anymore. But I want to point out one thing, that if you set the cosmological function C2 equal to 0, then it's very, and also torsion to 0, it's very easy to see that this equation is solved by Fij equal to 0. If you set the torsion equal to 0, Fij becomes the standard Ricci tensor, okay? The usual Ricci tensor that we have. And if you set C2 equal to 0, then you see that this, that Fij equals 0 kills that term, second term, all the terms disappear. And the torsion equals 0 kills these two terms. This means that the massless graviton is always in the spectrum of the storm. Whatever you do, you'll get a massless graviton. The question is whether we get other things, including the massive graviton. So,
the Ricci equals 0 is a solution to the equation of motion. But why is that the same thing as having a massless graviton?
Well, there's always Ricci equal to 0 is just free initial expressions in flat space, for instance. Flat space, the solution in the space will give you the graviton.
You're saying if I turn off all the fluctuations, you just fluctuate in that direction, and I'll get the usual thing.
Yeah.
But do you know that the mixing is going to be?
That's what I'm showing. Okay. And I'm showing, in fact, for the flat space, I'm showing all the results, the full result.
Can I ask, maybe you said this and I missed it. Are you assuming that the connection is vector compatible?
That means, what does that mean, sorry?
Well, basically, the covariant derivative of the metric components is still zero.
Yeah, the covariant, if you construct the metric from this sphere, by the covariant derivative.
So, the next set of equations is the torsion equation, which generically they look like this. We have the detail, of course, in the paper, but it's more lengthy than even the gravitational equation. But in any case, all the equations that I've shown you in the fundamental variables, they are second order. There is no fourth order derivative or construction. Now, let's first look at the background solutions before going to the flat screen. We would like first to consider a background in which the torsion is equal, but the background can be curved. You can examine that all these complicated equations that are written down, they can be rewritten in this suggested form. The gravitational equation becomes, if the torsion is zero, of course, then the Fij becomes the usual Ricci tensor. There's the eta here is the metric, Minkowski metric, that's the constant constructed from the original, the constant, the parameters of the Lagrangian. And this W is the Weyl tensor of the curvature tensor of the background. Okay? The torsion equations, on the other hand, give you this condition on the Weyl tensor. Remember that Weyl tensor is the same as the curvature tensor, except that all its space is length. Okay? So these are the background equations. I do not know what's the most general solution of these equations. But one immediate class of solutions to these equations is that to set Rij into equal to a constant times the metric. Since Weyl tensor is traceless in all instances, this term will drop out. And that equation obviously is the solution. And then you can show that this is also a solution. Right? This condition, in fact, can be rewritten in terms of a kind of Ricci tensor itself. So for this solution, the Riemann tensor of the background will be a piece which will look like a symmetric manifold plus the Weyl tensor. This is just a sort of geometrical identity that you can show. And immediately from there, you see that this Rij is this 3 lambda times eta ij. If you compare with the equation of motion in previous page, then you'll find out that this lambda is minus c2 divided by c1. Okay, so it's fixed in terms of the parameters of the Lagrangian. So these are the manifolds that we are going to examine, and we are going to look at the perturbations around these manifolds. In particular, the flat space, of course, is the solution. So let's first look at the flat space. This is the question that some of you have been asking. So for that, we couple the field to an appropriate tensor, source term, tau. First, we set the torsion force to zero. Okay? I will give the full result in next transparency, including torsion sources. So if you put the torsion source equal to zero, you can solve the linearized equations around the flat space, and you find out that this Sij, Hij, I guess this is what Philip has in mind, the perturbations of the metric, is given by a term which is you recognize as a pole at k squared equals zero with correct combination of the energy motion tensor. This important factor, a half there as opposed to this one third there, plus a second term which has a pole at k squared equals to minus n squared, that's clearly a massive pole, and the combination of the energy motion tensor in terms there is precisely the one that we have for a massive simple particle. Okay? So even if the torsion forces are zero, this h fluctuations of the pierre bind does not have only the massless gravitational relief, which we knew should be there anyway, but there's also massive Pauli. And the difference with the standard Pauli fields is that Pauli fields does not have this term, has this term only, and that coefficient is very much restricted. Here, of course, this is the Planck, 1/Planck, this is the Newtonian constant, or 8.5 times Newtonian constant. So this coefficient should be identified with the coupling of this mass system 2, and you see that it's independent from the Newtonian constant. In principle, it can have different values. So the usual problems which inflict the observation of deflection of light versus Newtonian potential, etc. Here, of course, the famous singularity that m squared going to zero, you don't get a 1/2 here, you have a 1/3, etc. Will still be there. But if you want, you can make it completely compatible with the experiment just by choosing this point to four. So that you can put observational bounds on them, that's what they should be. We do not want to do it right now for some physical reasons, but in any case, this is the general result for the flat space. And m squared is given by this combination of parameters. This alpha tilde is the Pauli field time mass parameter minus 51, etc. From combination of formulas like this, as well as a more general formula in which you keep also a source for the torsion, then you obtain all the restrictions on the various parameters that you introduce in the problem. So there is, if you include the torsion sources, in addition to the massless graviton, massive graviton, or this massive spin 2-pole, there is also a spin 0 mode. This is actually the longitudinal power for the axial vector A. We will not see this one in the future, but here is the complete expression. And that's it. To demand that the residues are positive, the mass are non-tachyonic, you obtain all these inequalities for the parameters on there. I don't know if the answer is the question.
Probably it doesn't.
I forgot what tau is, though.
Tau is the source for the gravitational fluctuations. Sigma is, well, it's more complicated. The source for the torsion fluctuations is the third line system.
Here you see only second line system. So there's a combination of the sources for gravity and torsion, which influences the family. There are two independent sources.
In usual acid gravity, it's phenomenologically okay because the longitudinal mode is strongly coupled. So is it also true here that
that's the whole point. But that's the same thing. This is what I'm showing you is just a warm up.
Okay.
Then to get to the main point.
The strongly coupled means in the high energy sense that it's the energy.
Yeah, exactly. So it becomes nonlinear and then effectively decoupled. Yeah. That's how they satisfy solar system.
Okay. So let's go to the curve backwards, okay? Because that's in there is the problem in the curve backwards. So let's go to the curve backwards. Now, as I told you, the solution that we're going to consider are arbitrary and Schelling molecules, the white class of curve background.
And this the spin zero part has this mass, it goes away from our problem. There is another combination of parameters. I'm sorry that I have to redefine parameters in many different ways. The other equations are very long, and but so kappa.
Kappa. Yeah. I don't know.
That doesn't look that kappa.
It's my image.
As far as not losing track of what's large and what's small, if you wanted the mass to be small compared to the Planck mass, so C1 was your.
I do not want to concentrate on that at the moment. I mean, you can look at the various domains of these parameters and what's small and what's large. For me, at the moment, is the challenge is the theoretical part. We need to get a mean. In principle, you can make something small.
Yeah.
Because you have enough number of parameters that you dispose of. For instance, there is a C5 in the problem. You can choose that C5 so that, you know, sorry, this massless two part becomes light, I believe. But I'm not prepared to answer that question right now. Okay. We can look at it. I have it on. Yeah. Okay. So, I was at a conference
last November with some of the participants here in Paris, and there the only result I had was for the singular spins. Since last November, actually the only thing they have discovered is this combination, that the right variable to use, by the way, this one means that we are looking at the fluctuations, first order fluctuations, around an Einstein length. eventually we discovered that if you choose this combination of the curvature and call it U, then that's the first variable. In terms of that, we can recast the equation into a recognizable form. It turns out that after a messy calculation, long calculation, that with this redefinition, and from now on we will see only U, not F anymore, with this redefinition, all the equations, all the torsion equations, can be put into a single equation. And this equation is the one that I'm calling generalized Higgs power. To see that, let me write it in four lines. The first line has only derivatives. The second line is the cost of original constant. Third line is a term which looks like, and it is indeed like the mass term in the Fritz Pauli theory. It's this combination which, if you write in expanded form, is this n squared, some combination of the parameters. And it's by examining this that you can see that it can be small or large, times uij minus eta ij times u, plus an extra term which involves the Weyl tensor. So firstly, if you set the background to the curvature of the background to zero, lambda will be zero, the Weyl tensor will be zero, these derivatives will be the orthogonal derivatives, therefore this will be obviously the fifth polynomial. If you set w equals zero, that's what happens for this next background like the theta and the theta, then this goes away, and this formally looks like the equation that people write, the Fritz Pauli equation people write in the current background. It looks slightly different, but the difference is due to the fact that we are using orthonormal bases rather than the coordinate spaces. If you compare the coordinate spaces, then it looks exactly like the equation in the current background. Okay? Formally, that's exactly what it looks like. So you would expect that you would get all the problems associated with the Fritz Pauli theory in the current background. So what I'm going to show is that that's not the case. In particular, you would expect that you would get the six propagation mode of Boolean and Bezier. And that's what I'm going to show that that's not the case. You will never get a six propagation mode from it. So, okay, so let me just make a small digression for ES, for which the Weyl tensor is zero, the mass is doing here. You can show that in this case that it is known that there's a unitary bond which should be satisfied by the mass of the spin two particle. It comes simply from group theory analysis, and in other ways, this is called the Higuchi bond, and it is satisfied by our mass formula, provided all those inequalities that I showed you before they are satisfied. Secondly, let's go to the general Einstein background. The trick is that you take the trace of the equation, you take the divergence of the equation. In the divergence of the equation gives you four first order constraints between the u's. So the uij has 10 independent components, this should reduce them to six. And the trace gives also a constraint on the trace of u, but then there are second derivatives on the right hand side. So you would expect that if, unless the Weyl tensor is zero, you would expect that this is not a constraint, it's an equation of motion, having second derivatives on the right hand. But the careful analysis of this, if you go back to the equation of motion and expand this, you will discover that there are no second order time derivatives there, in fact. So it's a constraint, and there are five probability degrees of freedom. This is sort of hard way analysis of this problem, and it does not tell you if there are ghosts or not. However, for the theta space, as I told you, that it's obvious that there are only five degrees of freedom. And this is what I already told you. Let's go and do something more intelligent than brute force counting. So the first thing is that equation which I wrote can be derived from a bilinear action. The action has a part which comes from the expansion of Einstein-Hilbert action if you treat u as a perturbation of some metric tensor. So obviously it's invariant under some local gauge transformation. Then there's a mass term, and then there's this Weyl tensor containing term. In detail, the mass term is this, which is like the power of this mass term, and the term which contains the Weyl tensor is given here. Okay? So from the difference from the usual Pauli-Firth and curve background is that but usually the things do not add something. So the source of difficulty, however, is in the mass term. Also in the Pauli fifth, the source of difficulty is system. And, yeah.
Yeah, in the future, then is W a background or dynamic?
Background.
It's background.
Yeah.
So, as I said, if you substitute
Uij by U bar ij plus some this covariance of some vectors in psi, this is like a linear coordinate transformation in the standard way of doing it. S invariant, of course, is invariant by construction, but Sn and Sw will depend on psi j. Okay? The trick, which was invented by Stuckelberg for the treatment of massive vector theories and generalized to the context of massive graviton or Pauli fields by these authors, is to introduce redundant fields, extra fields. So we replace Uij by U bar ij plus this combination of a vector field psi plus a spin zero field. So in this way, we have increased the number of field components from 10 to 4 plus 1, that means 15 components. Now we have a theory with 15, if you make the substitution reaction, we will have a theory with 15 components rather than 10. So this is something that it may look strange. We want to show that there are only 5 degrees of freedom propagating. We have increased it to 15. However, you can impose a gauge invariance on this problem of two kinds. The first one is that U bar ij is shifted like a coordinate transformation. But at the same time, this psi is also shifted by this vector zeta j, zeta I. So clearly, this transformation will lead U invariance. U bar will change, psi will change, phi is not touched by this transformation. However, U will be invariant. Secondly, you can do another independent transformation in which psi I is shifted by a gradient, but phi is also transformed in such a way that they compensate each other. Again, U is invariant. So the total action written in terms of U bar, psi, and phi will be invariant under these transformations. And if, of course, if you substitute this, the S invariant will not depend on psi and phi because it's just a coordinate transformation, local coordinate transformation U, but Sn and Sw will depend on these fields. Okay? So indeed, we have 15 propagating degrees of freedom. On the other hand, we have 4 gauge symmetries coming from psi, 1 from phi, therefore all together 5 degrees of freedom, or 5 gauge symmetries. And if the equations of motions are second order, then that 5 local gauge invariance cuts 10 of the propagating degrees of freedom and leaves you with 5. Okay? Provided the equations of motion are second order. Okay? If this is the condition. If they're higher than second order, of course, this will not reduce the number of components. In fact, written in terms of phi, psi, and u, the standard field Pauli will not be second order. That's the reason you get back the Hulbert data mode in any vacuum. Okay? But I want to show you that our equations remain second order. They are second order. That mode that you were pointing out, the spin zero mode, actually does not produce a fourth order equation. So what we do, you just make the substitution. The dangerous part of the action is the mass term. That's the term which produces a fourth order derivative for the phi term and makes it unhealthy. What happens in this case is that by doing integration by parts, actually the kinetic energy term for the phi term reduces to the standard kinetic energy. And it is positive if you look at these parameters and compare it with the other things that I've given you, you'll see that it has the correct sign, therefore it's not a problem. So if W was 0, this would be the end of the story. You have 15 degrees of freedom, 5 gauge symmetries, 5 constraints. Then altogether, you will have 5 propagating degrees of freedom and equations second order. No cost, nothing. Okay? So that set is the problem for the decision system. The fifth Pauli and all its modifications and improvements of the system, et cetera, never solve the problem.
If you go beyond the quadratic terms.
In the standard fifth Pauli, it continues to the kinetic energy. Right? But here, there is no beyond quadratic because U is not the perturbation of the metric and the background is the solution of the quantum dimorphism. So as far as the kinetic energy term is concerned, this is all there is. If you include time terms, that you can include, of course, then you will get infection terms. You will not get contribution to the kinetic energy. If these terms are. That I haven't worked on. But you can work on it. It's just not a substitution. Okay?
The question of Justin.
Presumably, you want the interacting term to suppress the scalar field in solar system.
Sorry?
You want the interaction term, let's say a cubic term of phi, to suppress phi, let's say in solar system. Basically, Wittgenstein.
Right? I have a comment from Wittgenstein. I have a comment to make about the noisy axis. Okay? But we have not worked on the miracle of the comet, Wittgenstein. And the reappearance of Wittgenstein is probably here. But the thing that I want to let me first finish this part. That's from the next thing that I have finished. So SW of course is also there if you do not have
if the background is not the theta. Then if W was zero, that would be the end of the string. It turns out that the remember that SW contains U square terms. That substitution in principle describes also force derivative in SW. But again, by manipulating and using the properties of the background solution, you discover that here also there is a two derivative terms for phi. So this term in principle will contribute to the kinetic energy term. And there is a mixing between U and phi. Okay? But you never get a four derivative term. So there's two derivative terms. Now, this is the condition that I was mentioning in the beginning. If the curvature is small, then that's it. These terms will be smaller than the kinetic energy we saw before. So it will be healthy, and then there will be five proportions because of freedom, with correct sign of kinetic energy and all that. But if this condition is unsatisfied, of course, then we have to diagonalize this and see what happens. And that we haven't done. So this condition is interesting. For instance, if you take a Schwarzschild background clearly satisfies our background equation for which the W is not zero. You'll find out that the condition gives you a kind of Wittgenstein radius. This is there is series of Wittgenstein radii. This is the smallest of them. Okay? Presumably, if the mixing is important, then one has to take the nonlinearities into account, exactly like in the standard Wittgenstein mechanism. And then probably we will get radii shorter than the Wittgenstein radii, you will get the usual thing. And about that, the nonlinearity is probably going to be irrelevant. In any case, we have shown that the nonlinearity is irrelevant if that bound is satisfied. Okay? So the nonlinearity probably will be important again. But this is all unclear because we don't know about the diagonalization of that extra term which I mentioned. So this is what I'm saying. Does Wittgenstein have to cure potential force? Because that mixing in principle contradicts the force. For the range of parameters, for the range of radii at the same case. But does it produce a force? That we don't know. Nevertheless, there will be never a sixth propagation mode. The question is always true. So the question is to diagonalize a complicated thing, and that's this thing. Okay. So I'm probably at the end of the time. In time.
This is the beginning of the work. There is
plenty of things that needs to be clarified. The first question is, first of all, I showed you that the massive is in two particles. Again, there is the famous Van Damme, Veltman, Zafarov discontinuity, but that's solved by Wittgenstein and Hansen. consistency with test of GR. Do black holes have tensor hair? That is, I think, an interesting question. There are, of course, many further consistency checks one has to do in order to conclude that we have a healthy theory. For instance, we have considered only the also very wide class of curved backgrounds, but the torsion was zero. In principle, there can be also torsion in the background, etc. The topology is probably the place where the interesting things coming out of the city work. So all these questions are left unanswered. However, what I want to emphasize again is that this class of theories do not have fullness data. Whatever they have, they may have other thicknesses, but one thickness they do not have, and that's this extra spin zero propagating mode with both sides and energy. Now, there may be the instabilities we mix in the system with fuels by the usual way by Lenz and Tennyson with all the things in the next system. Thank you.
Yeah. Question?
Yes, so in respect to the first point, so you were always above the Kiguchi bound. So how can you take the M to zero limit?
That's, I guess.
Or can you go below the Kiguchi bound? And what
well, if you go below the Kiguchi bound, then you have already violated.
So you get the ghost there?
No, that's a good question. In the case of the persistent space, that question. Well, if you put a question like that, of course, there is no discontinuity in the first place. That means that there is a massless gravitation and a massless neutral particle, therefore, the question is discontinuity.
But can you go there? Can you go below the huge
range? I have to see, for instance, if in the Schwarzschild vacuum. No, this question becomes relevant for. Something like, let us think in terms of Schwarzschild background, where the cosmological constant is zero. So the Gucci bond is not a relevant question then. It's only relevant for the precipitous spins. So in that case, you can probably take the limit of punishing gravity here, and it's massive spin to mass.
Yes, the point here that I understood. When you write an original action with S squared terms in it, I would expect the connection to propagate with spin one particles.
It does. This V is a spin one particle.
Ah.
A is a spin one particle. But in this model, they don't propagate. V doesn't propagate at all. From A, it's only the longitudinal part which propagates as a spin.
What's the mechanism that stops the propagating?
It's essentially the choice of the parameters that has choose. If you go to other, there are other theories of this type, which is spin-one particle.
So the statement is a specific choice of parameters.
Yeah. There are other choices of parameters, which is spin-one particle can propagate.
Okay, so maybe we should go to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kenji, can I have something later?